This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to everyone by the high-tech miracle of the interwebs and through the worldwide facilities of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. The IDS brings you John Malden and Brad Oxnam, whom return in The Casebook of Sherlock Holmes with The Adventure of the Mazarin Stone. And now, for our weekly visit with our good friend and host, Dr. Watson, which starts with a knock on the door.
Hello, Dr. Watson. Dr. Watson? I've brought you your...
Ah, Miss Bartell. Good God, do please come in. Is it that time again?
Yes, it is. I brought you your dinner and lunch for tomorrow. And a little treat for you, since you always tell such wonderful stories of your adventures with Mr. Holmes. I know how you like my blueberry muffins.
Oh, Miss Bartell, you spoil me. You know I love how your muffins are moist to the taste, but not too sticky on the fingers. Me, where are my manners? Care for a glass of wine?
Petri wine?
Of course. Your uncle left me many wonderful cases of Petri wine. I doubt I'll get through them in my lifetime, but I'll give it a try, eh, what? Yes, this Lambrusco should go nicely with your muffins. You'll get the plates and I'll pour the wine.
Oh, yes, Doctor.
You know, Miss Bartell, your sneaking muffins in with my lunch reminds me of the time my friend Sherlock Holmes pulled a very similar trick on a very proper Lady Cantermere. Ah, yes, it was the case of the Mazarin Stone. I was pleased to find myself once more in the untidy room of the first floor in Baker Street, which had been the starting point of so many remarkable adventures. I looked round at the scientific charts upon the wall, the acid-charred bench of chemicals, the violin case leaning in the corner, the coal scuttle which contained of old the pipes and tobacco. Finally, my eyes came round to the fresh and smiling face of Billy, the young but very wise and tactful page, one of those Baker Street irregulars you've read about, Miss Bartell, who helped a little to fill the gap of loneliness and isolation which surrounded the saturnine figure of the great detective. I said to Billy, "It all seems very unchanged, Billy. You don't change either. I hope the same can be said of him."
"I think he's in bed and asleep."
"It is 7 in the evening of a lovely summer's day. That means a case, I suppose."
"Yes, sir. He's very hard at it right now. I'm frightened for his health. He gets paler and thinner and eats nothing." "When will you be pleased to dine, Mr. Holmes?" Miss Hudson asked. 7:30, the day after tomorrow," said he. "You know his way when he's keen on a case."
"Yes, Billy, I know."
"He's following someone. Yesterday he was out as a workman looking for a job. Today he was an old woman. Fairly took me in, he did, and I ought to know his ways by now. See that baggy parasol, which is leaning against the sofa? It's part of the old woman's outfit."
"But what is it all about, Billy?"
"I don't mind telling you, sir, but it should go no further. It's the case of the Crown Diamond."
What? The 100,000-pound burglary?"
"Yes, sir. They must get it back, sir. And why, we had the Prime Minister and the Home Secretary both sitting on that very sofa. Mr. Holmes was very nice to them. He soon put them at their ease and promised he could do all he could. Then there's Lady Cantermere."
"Ah?"
"Yes, sir, you know what that means. She's a stiff un, sir, if I may say so. I can get along with the Prime Minister, and I've got nothing against the Home Secretary, who seemed a civil, obliging sort of man, but I can't stand his ladyship. Neither can Mr. Holmes, sir. You see, she don't believe in Mr. Holmes, and she was against employing him. She rather he failed.
And Mr. Holmes knows it?
Mr. Holmes always knows whatever there is to know.
Well, we'll hope he won't fail and that Lady Cantlemere will be confounded. But I say, Billy, what is that curtain for across the window?
Mr. Holmes had put it up there 3 days ago. We got something funny behind it.
Now, Miss Bartell, you may find this hard to believe, but Billy advanced and drew away the drapery which screened the alcove of the bar window. I could not restrain a cry of amazement. There was a facsimile of my old friend, dressing gown and all, the face turned three quarters toward the window and downward as though reading an invisible book, while the body was sunk deep in an armchair. Billy detached the head and held it in the air.
My stars, that scamp.
Yes, Billy, always one for a laugh. But then he said,
"We put it at different angles so that it may seem more lifelike. I wouldn't dare touch it if the blind were not down. But when it's up, you can see this from across the way."
Oh, yes. We've used something of the sort once before.
Before my time, there were folk who watch us from over yonder. I can see a fellow now at the window. Have a look for yourself.
That will do, Billy. You're in danger of your life then, my boy, and I can't do without you just yet. Well, Watson, it's good to see you in your old quarters once again. You come at a critical moment.
So I gather.
You can go, Billy. That boy's a problem, Watson. How far am I justified in allowing him to be in danger?
Danger of what, Holmes?
Of sudden death. I'm expecting something this evening.
Expecting what?
To be murdered, Watson.
No, you are joking, Holmes.
Even my limited sense of humor could evolve a better joke than that. But we may be comfortable in the meantime, may we not? Is alcohol permitted? The gasogene and cigars are in the old place. Let me see you once more in that customary armchair. You have not, I hope, learned to despise my pipe and my lamentable tobacco. It has to take the place of food these days.
But why not eat?
Because the faculties become refined when you starve them. Why, surely as a doctor, my dear Watson, you must admit that what your digestion gains in the way of blood supply is so much lost to the brain. I am a brain, Watson. The rest of me is a mere appendix. Therefore, it is the brain I must consider.
But this danger, Holmes?
Ah, yes, in case it should come off. It would perhaps be as well that you should burn your memory with the name and address of the murderer. You can give it to Scotland Yard with my love and a parting blessing. Silvius is the name. Count Negretto Silvius. Write it down, man, write it down. 136 Moorside Gardens, NW, Northwest. Got it?
Count me in, Holmes. I have nothing to do for a day or two.
Your morals don't improve, Watson. You've added fibbing to your other vices. Now you bear every sign of the busy medical man with calls on him every hour.
Not such important ones, but can't you have this fellow arrested?
Yes, Watson, I could. That's what worries him, sir.
But why don't you?
Because I don't know where the diamond is.
Ah, Billy told me. The missing crown jewel?
Yes, the great yellow Mazarin stone. I have cast my net, and I have my fish. But I've not got the stone. What is the use of taking them? We can make the world a better place by laying them by the heels, but that is not what I'm out for. It is the stone I want.
And is this Count Silvius one of your fish?
Yes, and he's a shark. He bites. The other is Sam Merton, the boxer. Not a bad fellow, Sam, but the Count has used him. Sam's not a shark. He is a great big, silly, bully-headed gudgeon, but he's flopping around in my net all the same.
Where is this Count Silvius?
I've been at his very elbow all the morning. You've seen me as an old lady, Watson. I was never more convincing. He actually picked up my parasol for me once. "By your leave, madam," said he, half Italian, you know, and with the southern graces of manner when in the mood, but a devil incarnate in the other mood. Life is full of whimsical happenings, Watson.
It might have been tragedy.
Well, perhaps it might. I followed him to old Strabenzi's workshop in the Minories. Strabenzi made the air gun, a very pretty bit of work, as I understand, and I rather fancy it is in the opposite window at the present moment. Have you seen the dummy? Of course, Billy showed it to you. Well, it may get a bullet through its beautiful head at any moment. Ah, Billy, what is it?
Yes, sir, a visitor.
The man himself. I hardly expected this. Grasp the nettle, Watson. A man of nerve. Possibly you've heard of his reputation as a shooter of big game. It would indeed be a triumph ending to his excellent sporting record if he added me to his bag. This is proof that he feels my toe very close behind his heel.
Send for the police.
I probably shall, but not just yet. Would you glance carefully out of the window, Watson, and see if anyone is hanging about in the street?
Yes, there is one rough fellow near the door.
That would be Sam Merton, the faithful but rather fatuous Sam. Where is this gentleman, Billy?
In the waiting room, sir.
Show him up when I ring.
Yes, sir.
If I'm not in the room, show him in all the same.
Yes, sir.
Look here, Holmes. This is simply impossible. This is a desperate man who sticks at nothing. He may have come to murder you.
I should not be surprised.
I insist upon staying with you.
You would be horribly in the way.
In his way?
No, my dear fellow, in my way.
Well, I can't possibly leave you.
Yes, you can, Watson, and you will, for you have never failed to play the game. I am sure you will play it to the end. This man has come from his own purpose, but he may stay for mine. Here, take a cab to Scotland Yard, and give this note to Youngle of the CID. Come back with the police. The fellow's arrest will follow.
I'll do that with joy.
Before you return, I may have just enough time to find out where the stone is. I think we'll go out through the bedroom. This second exit is exceedingly useful. I'd rather want to see my shark without his seeing me, and I have, as you will remember, my own way of doing it.
Oh my gosh, how terrifying! What happens next, Dr. Watson? I almost can't bear it.
Well, Miss Bartell, we have been in lots of hair-raising scrapes before, but this had to be one of the most peculiar. It was, therefore, an empty room into which Billy, a minute later, ushered Count Silvius. The famous game-shot sportsman and man-about-town was a big, swarthy fellow with a formidable dark moustache shading a cruel, thin-lipped mouth and surmounted by a long, curved nose like the beak of an eagle. He was well-dressed, but his brilliant necktie, shining pin, and glittering rings were flamboyant in their effect. As the door closed behind him, he looked round him with fierce, startled eyes, like one who suspects a trap at every turn. Then he gave a violent start as he saw the impassive head and the collar of the dressing gown which projected above the armchair in the window. At first his expression was one of pure amazement. Then the light of a horrible hope gleamed in his dark, murderous eyes. He took one more glance round to see that there were no witnesses. Then, on tiptoe, his thick stick raised halfway, he approached the silent figure. He was crouching for his final spring and blow when a cool, sardonic voice greeted him from the open bedroom door.
Don't break it, Count. Don't break it. It is a pretty little thing. Tavierne, the French model, made it. He is good at waxworks as your friend Strabenzi is at air guns.
Air guns, sir? What do you mean?
Put your hat and stick on the side table, thank you. Pray, take a seat. Would you care to put your revolver out also? Oh, very good, if you prefer to sit upon it. Your visit is really most opportune, for I wanted badly to have a few minutes' chat with you.
I, too, wish to have some words with you, Holmes. That is why I'm here. I won't deny I intended to assault you just now.
I rather gathered that you had some idea of that sort in your head. But why these personal attentions?
Because you have gone out of your way to annoy me. Because you have put your creatures upon my trap.
My creatures? I assure you, no.
Nonsense. I have had them followed. Talk and play that game, Holmes.
It is a small point, Count Silvius, but perhaps you would kindly give me my prefix when you address me. You can understand that with my routine work I should find myself on familiar terms with half the rogues' gallery, and you will agree that exceptions are invidious.
Well, Mr. Holmes, then,
Excellent. But I assure you, you are mistaken about my alleged agents.
Other people can absorb as well as you. Yesterday, there was an old sporting man. Today, it was an elderly woman. They held me in view all day.
Really, sir, you compliment me. Old Baron Dawson said the night before he was hanged that in my case what the law had gained, the stage had lost. And now you give my little impersonations your kindly praise?
It was you? You yourself?
You can see in the corner the parasol which you so politely handed to me in the Minories before you began to suspect.
If I had none, you might never...
I've seen this humble home again. I was well aware of it. We have all neglected opportunities to deplore. As it happens, you did not know, and so here we are.
What you say only makes the matter worse. It was not your agents, but your play-acting busybody self. You admit that you have dogged me? Why?
Come now, Count. You used to shoot lions in Algeria.
Well?
But why?
Why? The sport, the excitement, the danger.
And no doubt to free the country from a pest.
Exactly.
My reasons in a nutshell. Sit down, sir, sit down. There was another more practical reason. I want that yellow diamond.
Upon my word.
You knew that I was after you for that. The real reason why you're here tonight is to find out how much I know about the matter and how far my removal is absolutely essential. Well, I should say that, from your point of view, it is absolutely essential, for I know all about it, save one thing, which you are about to tell me.
Oh, indeed. And pray, what is this missing fact?
Where the crown diamond now is.
Oh, you want to know that, do you? How the devil should I be able to tell you where it is?
You can, and you will.
Indeed.
You can't bluff me, Count Silvius. You're an absolute plate glass. I see to the very back of your mind.
Then, of course, you see where the diamond is.
Then you do know. You have admitted it.
I admit nothing.
Now, Count, if you will be reasonable, we can do business. If not, you will get hurt.
And you talk about bluff.
Do you know what I keep in this book?
No, sir, I do not.
You.
Me?
Yes, sir, you. You are all here. Every action of your vile and dangerous life.
Damn you, Holmes. There are limits to my patience.
It's all here, Count. The real facts as to the death of old Mrs. Harold, who left you the Blymer estate, which you so rapidly gambled away.
You are a dream.
And the complete life history of Miss Minnie Warrender.
What? That you will make nothing of that.
Plenty more here, Count. Here is the robbery in the train du luxe to the Riviera on February 13th, 1892. Here is the forged check in the same year on the Credit Lyonnais.
No, you're wrong, Adele.
Then I am right on the others. Now, Count, you are an area card player. When the other fellow has all the trumps, it saves time to throw down your hand.
Well, that's all of this talk to do with the jewel of which you spoke.
Gently, Count. Restrain the eager mind. Let me get to the points in my own humdrum fashion. I have all this against you. But above all, I have a clear case against both you and your fighting bully in the case of the Crown Diamond.
Indeed.
I have the cabman who took you to Whitehall, and the cabman who brought you away. I have the commissionaire who saw you near the case. I have Ikey Sanders, who refused to cut it up for you. Ikey has peached, and the game is up. That's the hand I play from. I pull it all upon the table, put one card is missing. It's the King of Diamonds. I don't know where the stone is.
You shall never know.
No, now be reasonable, Count. Consider the situation. You are going to be locked up for 20 years. So is Sam Merton. What good are you going to get out of your diamond? None in the world. But if you hand it over, well, I'll compound a felony. We don't want you or Sam. We want the stone. Give that up, and so far as I'm concerned, you can go free so long as you behave yourself in the future. If you make another slip, well, it will be the last. But this time, my commission is to get the stone, not you.
But if I refuse?
Why then, alas, it must be you, and not the stone. I think, Count, that it would be as well to have your friend Sam at this conference. After all, his interests should be represented. Billy, you will see a large and ugly gentleman outside the front door. Ask him to come up.
If he won't come, sir.
No violence, Billy. Don't be rough with him. If you tell him that Count Silvius wants him, he will certainly come.
Yes.
What are you going to do now?
My friend Watson was with me just now. I told him that I had a shark and a gudgeon in my net. Now I am drawing the net, and up they come together.
You want to die in your bed, Holmes.
I have often had the same idea. Does it matter very much, after all, Count? Your own exit is more likely to be perpendicular than horizontal. But these anticipations of the future are morbid. Why not give ourselves up to the unrestrained enjoyment of the present? It is no use you finger-tipping your revolver, my friend. You know perfectly well that you dare not use it, even if I gave you time to draw it. Nasty, noisy things, revolvers, Count. Better stick to air guns. Ah, I think I hear the fairy footstep of your estimable partner. Good day, Mr. Merton. Rather dull in the street, is it not? What's the game now, Count? What's this fellow want? What's up? If I may be put it in a nutshell, Mr. Merton, I should say it was all up. Is this cove trying to be funny, or what? I'm not in the funny mood myself. No, I expect not. I think I can promise you that you will feel even less humorous as the evening advances. Now look here, Count Silvius. I'm a busy man, and I can't waste time. I'm going into that bedroom. Pray make yourself quite at home in my absence. You can explain to your friend how the matter lies without the restraint of my presence. I shall try over the Hoffman Barcarolle upon my violin. In 5 minutes I shall return for your final answer. You quite grasp the alternative, do you not? Shall we take you, or shall we have the stone? What is it in? Does he know about a stone?
He knows the damn sight too much about it. I'm not sure that he doesn't know all about it.
Oh, good lord.
He Cassander says he split on us.
Oh, he is he? Well, I'll do him a frickin' for that if I swing for it.
But that won't help us much. We've got to make up our minds of what to do.
Half a mo. He's a lyric cove, he won't just watch, and I suppose he's not listening.
How can he be listening without the music going?
That's right. Maybe somebody's behind a curtain. Too many curtains in this room. What is that?
It's only a dummy.
A fake, is it? Well, strike me. Madame Tussauds ain't in it. It's the living spit of him, gown and all. But them curtains count.
Oh, confound the curtains. We are wasting our time, and there is none too much. He can lag us over his stone.
The deuce he can.
But he'll let us sleep if we only tell him where the swag is.
What? Well, give it up. Give her 100,000 quid.
He's so one or the other.
He's alone in there. Let's do him in. If his light were out, we should have nothing to fear.
He is armed and ready. If we shot him, we could hardly get away in a place like this. Besides, it's likely enough that the police know whatever evidence he has got. Hello? What was that?
Something in the street. Now, look here, Governor. You've got the brains. Surely you can think a way out of it. If slugging is no use, then it's up to you.
I've fooled better men than he. This stone is here in my secret pocket. I take no chances leaving it about. It can be out of England tonight and got into 4 pieces in Amsterdam before Sunday. He knows nothing of Van Seder.
I thought Van Seder was going next week.
He was, but now he must get off by the next boat. One or other of us must slip round with the stone to Lime Street and tell him.
But a false ball mate ready.
Well, he must take it as is and chance it. There's not a moment to lose. That noise from the street again, eh? As to Holmes, we can fool him easily enough. You see, the damn fool won't arrest us if he can get the stone. Well, we'll promise him the stone. We'll put him on the wrong track about it, and before he finds that it is in the wrong track, it will be in Holland and we out of the country.
That sounds good to me.
You go on and tell the Dutchman to get a move on him. I'll see the sucker and fill him up with a bogus confession. I'll tell him that the stone is in Liverpool. Confound that whining music, it gets on my nerves. By the time he finds it isn't in Liverpool, it will be in quarters and we on the blue water. Hey, now, come back here, out of a line with that keyhole. Here is the stone.
I wonder you dare carry it.
Where could I have it safer? If we could take it out of Whitehall, someone else could surely take it out of my lodgings.
Let's have a look at it. Why? You think I'm going to snatch it off you? See here, mister. I'm getting a bit tired of your ways.
Oh, well, no offense, Sam. We can't afford to quarrel. Come over to the window if you want to see the beauty properly. and hold it to the light. Here.
Thank you. No violence, gentlemen, no violence. I beg of you, consider the furniture. It must be very clear to you that your position is an impossible one. The police are waiting below.
But how did this?
Your surprise is very natural. You are not aware that a second door from my bedroom leads behind that curtain. I fancied that you must have heard me when I displaced the figure. But luck was on my side. Give me a chance of listening to your racy conversation, which would have been painfully constrained had you been aware of my presence.
I give you best, Holmes. I believe you are the devil himself.
Not far from him, at any rate. Well, fair cop, but oh, I say, what about that bloomin' bill? I hear it yet. Tut-tut. You're perfectly right. Let it play. These modern gramophones are a remarkable invention.
Miss Bartell, he always loved that gramophone. One, if I dare say, few of them his most treasured possessions.
But what happened to Count What's-His-Face and Sam the Boxer?
Well, there was an inrush of police, the handcuffs clicked, and the criminals were led to the waiting cab. I congratulated him, and that was his that.
But where was the sneaking in part, when he switched the dummy out and replaced it with himself?
Oh, no, Miss Bartell, I was just about to get to that, for you see, just then, Billy came in and said...
Lady Cantermere, sir.
Show her up, Billy. This is the eminent peer who represents the very highest interests. She's an excellent and loyal person, but rather the old regime. Shall we make her unbend? Dare we venture upon a slight liberty? She knows, we may conjecture, nothing of what has occurred.
Yes, sir.
This is the very person of high esteem, Miss Bartell.
Oh, my. What was she like?
The door opened to admit a thin, austere figure with a hatchet face which hardly corresponded with the rounded shoulders and feeble gait. Holmes advanced affably and shook an unresponsive hand.
How do you do, Lady Cantermere? It is chilly for this time of year, but rather warm indoors. May I take your overcoat?
No, I thank you. I will not take it off.
Pray allow me. My friend, Dr. Watson, would assure you that these changes of temperature are most insidious.
I am quite comfortable, sir. I have no need to stay. I have simply looked in to know how your self-appointed task was progressing.
It is difficult, very difficult.
I feared that you would find it so. Every man finds his limitations, Mr. Holmes, but at least it cures us of the weakness of self-satisfaction.
Yes, ma'am. I have been much perplexed.
No doubt.
Especially upon one point. Possibly you could help me upon.
You apply for my advice rather late in the day. I thought that you had your own all-sufficient methods. Still, I am ready to help you.
You see, Lady Cantermere, we can no doubt frame a case against the actual thieves.
When you have caught them.
Exactly. But the question is, how shall we proceed against the receiver?
Is this not rather premature?
It is as well to have our plans ready. Now, what would you regard as final evidence against the receiver?
The actual possession of the stone.
You would rest him upon that?
Most undoubtedly.
In that case, my dear lady, I shall be under the painful necessity of advising your arrest.
You take a great liberty, Mr. Holmes. In 50 years of official life, I cannot recall such a case. I'm a busy person, sir, engaged upon important affairs, and I have no time or taste for foolish jokes. I may tell you frankly, sir, that I have never been a believer in your powers, and that I have always been of the opinion that the matter was far safer in the hands of the regular police force. Your conduct confirms all my conclusions. I have the honor, sir, to wish you good evening.
One moment, madam. To actually go off with the Mazarin stone would be a more serious offense than to be found in temporary possession of it.
Sir, this is intolerable. Let me pass.
Put your hand in the right-hand pocket of your overcoat.
What do you mean, sir?
Come, do what I'd ask.
What? How is this, Mr. Holmes?
Too bad, Lady Cantermere, too bad. My old friend here will tell you that I have an impish habit of practical joking. Also that I can never resist a dramatic situation. I took the liberty, the very great liberty, I admit, of putting the stone into your pocket at the beginning of our interview.
Sir, I am bewildered. But yes, it is indeed the Mazarin Stone. We are greatly your debtors, Mr. Holmes. Your sense of humor may, as you admit, be somewhat perverted, and its exhibition remarkably untimely. But at least I withdraw any reflection I have made upon your amazing professional powers. But how...
Well, the case is but half finished. The details can wait. No doubt, Lady Cantemere, your pleasure in telling of this successful result in the exalted circle to which you return will be some small atonement for my practical joke. Billy, will you show her out, her ladyship out, and tell Mrs. Hudson that I should be glad if she would send up dinner for two as soon as possible?
With pleasure, sir, with pleasure.
That was an amazing story, Dr. Watson. You always deliver.
Oh, thank you, Miss Bartell. But speaking of deliveries, hadn't you better be on your way?
Oh, my, yes. Thank you. I'll see you next week.
You are quite welcome, dear.
Hey, Doctor. Better check your robe pockets.
Well, what? Good God! Bless my soul! It's a muffin!
Goodbye now.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by John Maldon and is adapted from the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Mazarin Stone. John Maldon as Sherlock Holmes and Sam Merton, with Brad Oxnam as Dr. Watson and Count Silvius. Featuring Kristen James as Miss Bartell, Tara Maldon as Lady Cantemere, and Aidan Maldon as Billy. This is the IDS, the Inexplicable Dumb Show. This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to everyone by the high-tech miracle of the blah, 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 shit.
You start
okay. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. One, two, three, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Balls, okay.
Well, I'll give it a try, eh, what? yes, this Lambrusco should
Lambrusco.
Go... Yes, this Lambrusco should go nicely with your muffins.
It is absolutely essential for our... Damn it. Damn you, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and your crazy-ass words.
He says he's been led the world, yes.
Yes.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by John Maldon and is adapted from the Sir Arthur... Damn it, fucker. Excuse me, I mean balls.
Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the hosting donations accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.